Welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio. Hello, friends, and welcome to the latest installment of our new Chasing the Word series on the book of Ecclesiastes. What is it about that book? It's an aggravating read in good times, and it's a comforting read in challenging times. Friends, these are definitely challenging times, so I hope it is a comfort to you to study along with us in this important book, even as it can be so difficult to pin down exactly what God's trying to tell us through the words of the king. There's no pat answers here, but we promise a genuine, passionate pursuit of the hidden God in these pages. Thanks for joining us today. We'll pick up the discussion with a modern read of Ecclesiastes chapter 2. So I'll start again in verse 12, like you did with the Christian Standard Version, and this is how it reads for us. I turned on my heels to face wisdom and ask her where it all went. All those wise words sounded like the rantings of a fool or the babblings of a drunk. Had I been played for a fool? Were there more fools to come who will get drunk on my hard work and bear nothing but more fools hungry for folly? Well, compared to that, wisdom was certainly preferable. Like light is preferable to darkness. But that's about it. The world's full of wise men and fools who think themselves wise. And they're all going to the same place. Shocking, isn't it? All of them just stumbling in the darkness, really, all the way to the grave. What befalls one befalls the other. I moan to myself, the fool falls in the pit, and I'm no better off. Oh, what a cruel fate. The demise of the fool I understand, but the wise? I've got all the wisdom a man could hope for, and I'm still going down like the fool. The futility of it all is maddening. Even worse, when the wise man crumbles to dust, the fools left behind won't even remember his name. There rest the bones of the wise man and the fool, side by side. And foolishness keeps on going, oblivious to the wisdom that was lost. Then those fools will fill the graveyard, too. I'm sorry to admit that all this futility grew in me nothing but contempt. The very act of living, the striving for something better, just seemed like an evil joke. The wind howled its mockery all around me. I was working hard for nothing. I resented the waste of time pursuing things that only haunted me now. This burden was even heavier than the load of work I had heaped on myself to get here. I couldn't enjoy it, and someone after me would get to bask in it instead. Who knows what kind of person he'll be? Wiser than me? An utter imbecile? Either way, he gets full command of everything I've worked for all my life, and he'll get it all without lifting a finger. What a waste. Grief overwhelmed me. I couldn't shake the frustration of what my toils under the sun had not produced. Again, I thought, there's someone who's going to get everything I've worked for so hard, and he probably won't even deserve it. The finest things I could produce in life will be his toys. Why did I put myself through all of this? It's a sick and cruel joke. And what comes of it all? To be a human is to work hard and to have it all whipped out of your hands by that mocking wind. And still the hard work continues, and the sunburn gets more painful. It's really just endless pain and frustration that you cannot escape, and night is no solace, full of troubled dreams and anxiety about the struggles of tomorrow. Why even try? There's no good way out of the fix we're in. If you've got to eat and drink just to live, you might as well throw a party and toast the hard work that vexes you. The soul senses the reality behind it all. You work hard so you can eat, because it's the thing that God himself gave to man to bring some sense of purpose. Without it, there would be nothing at all. If someone knows how to eat or drink, it's certainly me. No one ever drank me under the table. I've learned this. If you're given wisdom and you celebrate your fortune, or whether you're stuck in sin and tough living and lighten your burden with dissipation, either way, we all face God in the end, and to deny that fact is as futile as anything else. That to me, as hard as that truth is there at the end, I think is my one ray of hope in this entire chapter.
How so?
There seems to be a lesson in it. We can't avoid God. And the hint is there that he's waiting for us And that at the end of it, we do have to return to him what we did all this life. Mm-hmm. So there is an important aspect here, I think, of the writer of Ecclesiastes acknowledging that when it all comes down to it, we do have to give an account. And that is actually worth something. He's not on a good wavelength, but I think he knows what's coming.
You know, I used to fear thinking about that. We have to give an account of all we've done, of all we've accomplished or not accomplished during our time here on earth, to just fill me with fear because I thought, oh, what if I missed something? What if I didn't do the thing that God really wanted me to do, or what, all of those kinds of things that a perfectionist kind of walks through.
Someone who can't be satisfied with good enough.
Yeah. And it took me a long time in my spiritual journey to come to the place of grace, to come to the place
to yourself.
Of grace for myself. Yeah. To realize that God does not have it in for me.
Right.
That I live my life unto him, and he is pleased with me. He delights in me. He rejoices over me with singing, it says in Zephaniah. And I think he has such a great love for me. Not that my sin is okay, or not that when I mess up, it's okay, but that he has such great love for me that he sees that it's covered.
Yeah. I think the word about him singing over us is related to our concept of delight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for those of us who had small children or maybe grandkids now, there's just certain moments that just lock into your brain over the years that even if they're kind of mythic in proportions, you remember the time when things were so delightful.
Mm.
The laughter was so sweet and so innocent that you couldn't help
mm-hmm.
but be taken up into it.
Yeah.
And to just enjoy the moment and savor it and say, I never want to forget this.
Yeah.
Imagine that God is capable of delight beyond our biggest imaginations. Mm-hmm. And if we could delight in the children that we see near us that are innocent and happy and have no cares and share in their joys, mm-hmm. how much more a God who also knows no cares.
Mm-hmm.
He loves us and he suffers for us, but he's also immeasurably full of joy.
Yeah,
he is never without delight, and he is completely within himself, fully sufficient to enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
The love between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit is described as being one of ultimate relationship and delight.
Mm-hmm.
He's inviting us to experience that in him. He is never short of delight and joy,
mm-hmm.
and he wants us to enter into him. And again, this writer of Ecclesiastes keeps missing it. He keeps ending up with, all I was left with was futility and the howling of the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said all along, the wind we know is a direct representation, a metaphor of the Holy Spirit of God himself.
Yeah.
This man is so infuriated that he can't hold on, and he misses completely the delight of the wind dancing through his fingers.
Right.
And I don't know of a small child that does not delight in watching a dandelion send its seeds to the wind or falling bubbles across the yard. There's just something beautiful about seeing what the wind can do.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any child that doesn't admire and wonder at the things the wind can do? I think God's calling us back to that sense of, watch me, watch what I can do. Delight in it.
Yeah. It goes back to what we talked about from chapter one, that live with mystery, delight in the mystery of God, and that wind of the Spirit that just carries you. And I think there are absolute perfect times that we can allow the Spirit of God just to wash over us, to feel that wind of the Spirit. And it could be right in the middle of our hardest labor.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just have to go back to our attitude in our work. And if we have the attitude of resting in the Lord, of being grateful for all that he's given us, allowing the Spirit of God, the wind that Solomon talks about here, that he calls futile and unattainable. If we just rest in the Lord and feel that wind of his Spirit, it's refreshing.
Yeah.
And we can live in that delight and in that refreshment so easily if we just will.
And will's an important part of this. God gave us the opportunity to will something, to focus and understand and to project our intentions. That's a prayer.
Mm.
If we bring those to God, if we make demands, we have a certain kind of prayer, which is not worshipful, but it's a prayer. I'm telling you what I think, God. God doesn't sit around saying, oh, I got a bunch of stuff to tell you. His prayers back to us, the ones he really wants to express from his heart, are in the hand of delight and joy,
mm-hmm.
wisdom, and time spent. He wants to abide with us.
Mm-hmm.
So the two lessons that we had to take away when we first read this chapter was simply this. The lesson the author should have learned from my reading, it was simply that attitude is everything. Mm-hmm. It is the thing that makes things sour, makes it sweet. But it's not just an attitude that is something you make up. It is literally a gift of God as well. Mm-hmm. We can accept God's perspective and say, I want that perspective. I choose that. Mm-hmm. And when I discover what that perspective is, everything becomes sweet. Mm-hmm. Even difficulty or even torture for those who are persecuted for the mm-hmm. faith, mm-hmm. they can say it is sweet to be in the presence of God, even when everything's been stripped away, even my very life.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing to contemplate on the face of it. But there are certain times and places where the presence of God is so strong, mm-hmm. especially in the face of persecution, that we can't explain it. The peace that passes understanding is found there. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. And now, back to our discussion. There are certain times and places where the presence of God is so strong, mm-hmm. especially in the face of persecution, that we can't explain it. The peace that passes understanding is found there.
Yeah.
And yours was similar. We were talking about gratitude being mm-hmm. an essential part of work.
Yeah.
Because while you're working, it's that whole whistle while you work kind of thing coming from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Well, I don't know about that. Because I tend to be, like we've talked about before many times, I am the Eeyore of the family. I tend to be the pessimist about things. And so for me, choosing gratitude is a difficult thing sometimes because I do tend to see the negative side of things. So when I make a conscious effort to choose gratitude, it does change my attitude.
I think there's a different level of dissatisfaction. We could be pessimists about circumstances and things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this thing is going to last very long. It's built cheaply. I don't trust that this camera or this washing machine is going to last.
Right.
I'm pessimistic about that. There's a pessimism about circumstances. I don't think we're going to get out of this okay. I don't think we're going to be able to hang on to the house or the car because the finances are looking bad or other things like that are about circumstances.
Right.
There's a whole nother level about pessimism about relationships. I don't believe we can make it. I don't believe he is for me. I don't believe that God wants me to succeed. Mm-hmm. I don't believe whatever. We rarely want to confess those things, but they really are held deeply in our hearts. Mm-hmm. And that's why I believe that our emotions tell the truth about what we actually believe. When we let God soften our hearts enough to peel away those layers and look at them and confess them, to say, this is actually what I'm feeling, Lord, he takes it seriously. Mm-hmm. He may know full well that it's a lie we're buying into, but he knows we believe it, and it has consequences. Mm-hmm. So we confess those things so that he can gently lead us into truth.
Yeah.
And that's the hope I would have for all of us, that no matter what circumstances, no matter what the pessimisms you may be suffering through right now about things, circumstances, and people, that you would be brave enough to bring them to God and let him speak back to you. I know you get the last word on this one.
Okay. I want to revisit your thoughts on this about attitude and how you got from this, what the author should have learned was that attitude is everything. One of the things that we have been adamant about with our children, our oldest is now 24 years old. As they were growing up, we talked to them about choose your attitude.
Yeah.
Choose what kind of attitude you're going to have in a given situation. And that is so hard sometimes because sometimes you're just, you're just frustrated or you're just angry or you're...
And acknowledging that that was a choice is really hard for a kid. It seems to be an effect. It happened to me. I'm mad and I didn't do this. Mad came on me.
Right.
But no, not really.
Yeah.
We chose a certain kind of response. We chose to believe something mm-hmm. about the circumstances we're in mm-hmm. that lead us into this emotional pit.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we have talked to them about, and recently, because of the situations that our family has found itself in the loss of my mom and the grief that has accompanied that, and then the COVID-19 situation and being in quarantine, and now all of the things that are happening with the racial movements here in the States, it's been a lot of heavy conversations in our home.
The pressure cooker's been going, and we have to talk about it.
One of the things that our 11-year-old has said is, I'm just really mad. I'm just really sad. I don't know what to do with all of that. And one of the things that I've had to say to him is, honey, that's fine. Yeah. It's fine that you feel these things about all of the situations that we have found ourselves in. They're hard things, but you have to decide what you're going to do with all of that sadness and all of that anger and how you're going to let it release from your body because it has to when it gets pent up. So one of the things that we've talked about doing is give yourself some real practical things to do. Now, I don't want this to sound trite because I know that people are in some very difficult situations in their homes. We talked about people wondering if they're going to have a job to go back to or if their paychecks are going to be enough even when they do go back to their jobs. One of our daughters is trying to go back to school for the fall, and she's in limbo wondering, is it going to open up? Is it not going to open up? What's going to happen with all this? So there's a lot of limbo. There's a lot of uncertainty. But give yourself some practical things to do. And one of the things that I've told our 11-year-old is to think of three things that you're grateful for every day. Just think of three things. And when you decide about being grateful and being specific about being grateful, it does lighten your attitude. And it makes you consider the works of the Lord and consider the good things that God has done for you.
I don't think there's a frown at the end of any gratitude.
Yeah.
I think when we actually discover what we are grateful for, or at least confess something and remind ourselves that we really do believe this is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something we possess. Maybe it's somebody we love. Maybe it's the place we are. Maybe it's simply that we still have a job. Mm-hmm. And there are millions that still do. Whatever it is, if we can at least confess it as being something for which we can be and therefore should be thankful. Mm-hmm. At the end of that thought is very rarely more pessimism.
Yeah.
It's a reversing of all of that attitude problem and saying, God thinks about this differently. I need to reconsider this. Mm-hmm. And if we're willing to reconsider, we've really accomplished something. And God has really accomplished something in us. Mm-hmm. Because all of his wooing us to himself through his Spirit is all about bringing us close to him so that by being in his presence, we'll be transformed.
Yeah,
he is a catalyst. Just being near him is transformative. Mm-hmm. And we can, in little ways, think about people in our lives that transform the situations if we get close to them. Mm-hmm. Some of them we call our balcony people. Yeah. They are always cheering us on, and just being with them is always an encouragement.
Right.
Then we have the Debbie Downers in our lives that if we spend enough time with them, we are not going to leave the room without a frown.
Right.
You know, people transform us. Relationships transform us.
Well, I think it's important that we realize there is so much that we can do to change our attitude, to frame our attitude on a daily basis. We have an active part to play in that.
And sometimes it seems counterintuitive, but lament can be very much part of that healing. And lament is something we don't really understand very well in our culture, in our time. But it is absolutely core to the gospel even, and certainly core to the experience of the Jewish people throughout the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. There were times when things just never, ever seemed to go the right way. Mm-hmm. And even in that, lament could be expressed, and God received it. Mm-hmm. It's not that we have to be happy to go to God and tell him what's up. He said we have to be real. Mm-hmm. He knows full well the things that pressure us. Mm-hmm. He knows how we're handling the pressure. But it's still up to us to decide how we're going to express it to him.
Right.
And sometimes we need to sing the blues.
Well, I don't think by saying we have to choose gratitude or being grateful for things means that we're happy-go-lucky.
No, or that sorrows never come.
Yeah, because it is important to grieve the things that are painful to us, and to grieve the losses that we feel, and to lament over the trauma that we've experienced. It's so important.
Yeah. Consider that we understand instinctively, even in our own culture, what grief is. The deep-seated feelings that are almost uncontrollable at times that just well up within us when we feel a loss. Mm-hmm. We've felt that. We've known what it's been like, probably, to be brought to the verge of tears.
Yeah.
Imagine that there was a way to turn that into song and to make something beautiful even out of that. That, my friends, is what the biblical idea of lament is.
for a good resource, Psalm 13 is beautiful. It is all about David's lament. He turns it around so quickly from sadness to joy. He cries out to God and completely pours his heart out, but he ends up, "But I've trusted you. Yeah. You've been faithful."
Reminding God of who he is,
yeah,
as God has told him he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
People have used a lot of his psalms to make a psychological diagnosis of David. Mm. They've assumed he must be bipolar because he goes from the heights of joy to the depths of despair so quickly, it seems. Mm-hmm. Whether that was the way he structured it and spent time writing his songs, or whether that was his experience. He felt everything intensely. Maybe mm-hmm. he was bipolar. But the point was that we know he was a man after God's own heart, that God himself was saying he feels things deeply. Mm-hmm. But what he feels is always true. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he can help us in our miseries, in our hurts, and he can inform those emotions to reflect and to honor truth. Mm-hmm. And he will be gentle with us as we come through that process, because he's not going to slam us for believing something false about ourselves or somebody else, but he's going to demand of us we tell him the truth mm-hmm. about what we really believe. Mm-hmm. And so that's what lament, I think, is a great resource mm-hmm. for, Psalm 13.
Yeah, and we see Solomon doing that. We see him quasi-lamenting. It's more of a complaint. He doesn't get around to the offering it to God and turning a corner.
Maybe it's because it takes so long for him to release it. That the beginnings of lament are there, but it's a very long windup for him. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a whole lot of regrets and bitternesses that have built up over decades mm-hmm. that are just now pouring out of him and he can't stop it.
Right.
Maybe he's having a mental breakdown. Mm. Even in that regard, that to me tells me that God cared enough to sustain Solomon through this process that we could enter into that with him and see where we would go if pushed to the extremes and keep expecting of ourselves that we should have all the answers,
right,
like the writer of Ecclesiastes does. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people that assume that to be a follower of Christ, to be a religious person, to be a good person, means you've got to have the answers. I don't see that in the Bible anywhere.
Right.
What I see is those pursuing God have God, not the answers.
Yeah.
They have him.
And that's more important.
And more effective. More real, for the crying out loud.
Yeah.
I don't want the idea of kids. I want kids. I don't want a perfect image of a wife. I want a wife that knows me and loves me. You and I have to work on this the rest of our lives to make sure that stays real.
Yeah.
It doesn't slip into some kind of half real.
Yeah.
I know we've riffed on a lot of things here, but we're trying to talk about our real lives, assuming that you all have real lives too, friends, that you're not trying to hide. Mm-hmm. We are encouraging you from our hearts, pursue him because God is pursuing you. Thanks for listening with us, and it's been a long way through even chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, but what a great journey so far. Yeah. We'll look forward to talking with you all next week on chapter 3. Awake my soul and sing of him who died for me, and hail the master's king through all eternity. Yeah. Crown him with many crowns. Crown him the Lord. Years, the potentate of time, creator of the rolling spheres and effortly sublime. Oh, hail, Redeemer, hail, for thou hast died for me. Thy praise shall never, never fail. Sandy and I will continue our discussion on Ecclesiastes on next Monday's program. As we end today, I'd like to highlight again our wonderful resident artist this month, Michael O'Brien. His project, Crown Him, is available to you for your support of Compassion Radio in any amount. Just let us know how you want to support us, and we'll be glad to send you a copy or make a download available to you of this incredible project. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. If God has enabled you to support His kingdom purposes, please give generously where you hear God's word preached, celebrated, and lived. We need you, and we thank you for everything that you do and every prayer you offer on our behalf. Let us know you're standing with us and that you're chasing the word together with us. When you call or write us today with your tax-free gift, make sure to ask for Michael O'Brien's brand new music project, Crown Him, available on CD or for digital download. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.